Good evening, everyone. Good evening. It is 7 o'clock and it's Wednesday night. What we're discovering is we're working right now. Actually, what we're actually doing in this class is we're working on the book by E.J. Gold called The Invocation of Presence. And part of the purpose of working in that book is so that we can find ways and means. Each of us are going to develop our own ways and means to carry it 7 o'clock on Wednesday night with us wherever you go. We are working on developing invocational methodology that you can carry around actively all the time. Now, I'm not quite ready to get into the text, if that's okay.
I'm happy about that.
Good.
Because I want to insert whenever it's an opening, but I'm patient.
Yeah, right, and I appreciate that very much. Okay, so it doesn't do any good to have my hands up like this, right?
For whom?
I don't know.
It may be doing some good. Continue and find out.
I'm continuing to have my hands up, and I'm holding my hands up about, 29 inches apart. Okay, 28 inches or so. A cubit actually is
this distance right here.
This is a cubit. It's one cubit apart. I'm holding my hands up. The distance has no significance whatsoever, but they are still up. Now, on my left hand is one point, and my right hand is a different one. So the left hand represents the phenomenal world. The right hand represents the non-phenomenal world, which is the world of invocation. It has a positive name. It is the area and arena. It's the area of the dream weave. It's that area. Now, most of us, for most of our lives, live in the world of the phenomena. We have no tools with which to see anything but the external world. We are locked into it with tremendous pressure, for good reason, because we have to protect ourselves. We have to survive somehow, right? We want to survive. So most of the time, we're locked into that, and the fact that we're locked into it and that we don't know that is part of the definition of what is sleep. Okay? And it is staggering to start to discover how identified we are with the external world. You'll notice then we'll go through the whole practical work on self again at some point. And you can demonstrate it to yourself over and over again. But we're mostly locked into the external world. The external world is mostly what has reality for us. Ever so gradually, over here in the non-phenomenal world, we start to develop presence. Just a little bit of it. And every once in a while, we scoot over here, and we have a little existence in that world. And we go back and forth. And then mostly what happens is our invocation closes down and we get identified again. The exercises that are here, Sean Barone on tonight, can you tell? He hasn't typed anything. But most of it, what we're doing is we're actually creating a footprint in this other world. It actually exists. does anybody have the HDM out? Do you have the HBM there, Harry?
I do not, David.
Okay. In the HBM, there's one of the chapters, or I think it's the HBM, called Establishing a Beachhead.
What's HBM?
Hello!
Hi, Judy.
Hi, what's HBM?
The Human Biological Machine as a
transformation. Oh, I have that book. Okay.
No, you look it up. What chapter is that? And so establishing a beachhead means that you're establishing a permanent stance in the non-phenomenal world. All right? Does that make sense? So it's permanent. It's actually developing permanence, and that's what we mean about when we talk about developing being. Okay? Now, this, we're on chapter 2, and as I indicated,
it's chapter 16, Attack at Dawn.
Attack at Dawn.
A beachhead into the fourth dimension.
Beachhead, in, okay. So that's part of what our job is. And so you should read through HBM, or Human Biological Machine, as a transformational apparatus. And I'm sure it's in Spanish. And have you got a copy of that? Do you have a copy in Spanish? No, we should make... Do you have it in English? Okay. I've got to get a copy in Spanish. And...
there's one up there.
Okay. The point is this. So now we're in Chapter 2 of EJ's book called The Invocation of Presence. In a sense, the book, this book here, Invocation of Presence, is just a pure conversation of how to take a stance in the non-phenomenal world. All right?
That's nice.
It is. It's like everything is set aside. That's why this isn't, in a certain way, this book isn't that common. This is the first time we're going through it in many, many years. Ivan and I read it 10 years, 25 years ago. And I see you probably, was it circulating way back when?
It was created way back when, and I was one of the
part
ones
of that.
At that time, yeah.
Go ahead, Ivan.
I was just going to say that I think the way we look at, on it is it's a foundational book. It's very basic, just like the practical work on self and the human biological machine that you're talking about. But the other thing you're referring to is, This book is, there's something about it that's too simple for the human mind. It's actually more, I think it's more esoteric than just about anything in the more theoretical books. There's hardly anything theoretical to me in this book.
This idea of it's too simple for the human mind, but I've been referring to it's too simple for the human mechanical mind. We can stand in another stance, take a dance over to that world at any time, but we must do it voluntarily.
Well, that must be my cue.
That is your cue. Go ahead.
So 2 weeks ago, we brought up the subject of what is it that you do that you would call, you know, practicing this first exercise that's given, it's laid out, it's, you know, the 2 minutes, and can you pay attention for 2 minutes? How do you go about it? And it was just sort of like a survey, you know, what's the manner in which it gets accomplished, or you know, what's the history with trying to do it? And I started looking at what my normal procedures are for attempting this on a daily basis, and I have a few. And then tonight I was thinking about this in preparation for this class, and I was going, well, what it is for me is like the warm-up exercises that you must do before you do the calisthenics, before you do the running, before
stretching.
You do the aerobics. Yes.
The stretching.
It's the preliminaries.
Nice. Okay.
It's not the thing itself. It is getting you to it. And if you start cold, and I tested myself on this, if you start cold, for myself, I sit to do the Invocation of Presence exercise, the formal one as is defined in this book. I have some physical reactions to that, strong ones. And I'm going, why am I doing it this way when I've been doing it that other way, which is circling it around and warming it up? So I just want to offer that as a formula for people to consider this as the foundation, like Ivan is saying, very, very practical foundation. But go at it like the warm-ups. You don't jump into warm-ups. You gradually work your way into them. You don't do the stiffest stretch the first one. You do the little wiggly. You make sure all the muscles are warm. You don't do the full sudden salutation. Okay, that's it. That's what I want to offer.
Gradually, when you start doing this more and more and more, it actually is a response to the world. You will wind up, instead of being plowed into the left side, which is the phenomenal world, you wake up. The world wakes you up. After you've created enough space in yourself, and you can do that. Now, I find it very interesting where EJ goes at the bottom of page 8 on the right-hand column.
Mm-hmm.
And can you give us the Spanish edition starts, a new candidate entering our work. That would be right near the beginning of chapter 2.
Chapter 2, right-hand column, right-hand column,
near the bottom.
Second paragraph from the bottom.
What page are we on?
41.
Hey.
In the Spanish version.
In the Spanish version, about page 41. Judy, we're on page 8, the right-hand column near the bottom.
Okay.
Now, why is it that he just suddenly starts talking about, he says, a new candidate intern at our work can first be offered this beginning experiment to invoke his present into the present. What is that? Why is he now saying just suddenly, here's a new guy coming on the block, what are you going to do? So the first thought I had when I read that was, what would I do if a new guy came around and I had to help that person understand what does it mean to invoke your presence? This somebody you met that for some reason is there, is in a sense in front of you. You find someone in front of you, and that's on the table. I had a very unusual breakfast this morning. I mean, it actually wasn't going to be a breakfast, and then I get this text, and someone says, oh, my business breakfast canceled. Can you have breakfast with me? And I always take something like that so odd. I thought, why did this happen, you know?
Yeah.
Why did this person, you know, pretty weird, you know? The person she was going to meet with couldn't find her keys to the car and got stuck, and I said, sure, I'll meet with you. So we started talking about this special conference that had just gone on in Mount Shasta. And she was saying, she was actually bringing up this thing about how there's this other world. And I realized that I had to figure out how to tell her that that's what is available to you. This isn't a theory. This mystical shamanic world is only mystical and shamanic because we don't pay attention to it. But it's very expensive to do that because in order to be fluid and shape-shift between this world and this world, the phenomenal and the non-phenomenal, you have to have a fluidity within yourself. There has to be a fluidity and you have to be facile. You have to dance, be able to dance, and know where you are at all times. Sometimes you must work in the phenomenal world with direct diligence, but then know when it's time to come back. And so this person is just starting to kind of learn about the spiritual world and all this stuff, and that's why she wanted to talk to me. I thought, well, how am I going to explain this to her, right? And she's like dealing with this big business in town and all this stuff and dabbling in all this other thing. So how can we explain this to our fellow voyagers? Because someone is going to wind up across the table with you tomorrow. Okay? And you can't say, oh, well, read this book. That's ridiculous. So how do we begin introducing people? What are some of the key elements in introducing somebody as indicated in this particular paragraph where he says, If as a result of this experiment he sees a necessity for work, only then can he be given more. If he's not interested, let him continue to sleep. But what if you find something that's like interest, there's a little interest?
My first thought is always that you have to manifest that which you want others to become aware of.
Example.
So invoke your presence and be with them and be responsive if they also invoke their presence, but do not take upon yourself the battering ram method of waking them up. That's very painful for everybody. But yeah, invoke your own presence and be there. And that's the first step, is always to, you know, model what you're talking about.
So in you're at that point, I call that exampleship. You are the example. But you can't do it from the point of view of ego, can you?
No, that's not it then, David.
If you have to go over here to the ego part, you lost it.
I love it.
Right?
Ego part. Smash.
And when you are in the non-phenomenal world, the dream wave, when you're standing in that world, in a certain way at that point, there's a certain equality of motion at that time. Nobody better or worse or anything. There might be people that are more capable guides, right? That's all. That's the only difference. Everybody's on the same boat at that time. And if you can stand there long enough, you're going to see that there are certain people who can see you. And you can see them. Yeah, go ahead. Stand the phone first.
One of the most effective tools that I've found is the amulet. It's something that I wear. And, you know, most people don't see it, but the people who do see it, they initiate the conversation with me. They enter into my space, and it's a very powerful beacon or resonating element that allows a very close interaction without pushing into their space. They enter the space.
Just there.
It's terrific.
Very good. And it's so weird that you can't, like, explain it away. You know, you can't just say, oh, that's a pretty little piece of jewelry. If they look at it, and they're going to go, what the hell is that thing? And so in a certain way, if you start to say, well, it's an energetic, you know, generator, some people will walk away from you or close down at that time, and some people will be intrigued. So in that last sentence there, not the very last sentence, but the previous one, he says, if as a result of this experiment he sees the necessity for work.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we stand in this place, in this dream wave, in the non-phenomenal world, the more we realize the importance that we have to work. And our work isn't so much to be in some club or some darn thing, but it's that there's just a bloody lot of work to do. There's just a lot of work to do. There's a lot before us to do. We're talking right now about ABD projects that are going to take over a year to do, you know, easy.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's only going to be 4 years to complete all of that.
All of them.
But, you know, the other thing about this is if you stand in your physical form and you're invoking your presence into the present. You've created a certain, I think we went through this 2 weeks ago, you've created a certain form of feedback. It's a certain mirror that is available. You know, go with me here for a little bit. But there's another in front of you, and they choose to be with you. What generally happens is what is reflected back to them because of your being present is their presence. That helps amplify.
Say that again.
If you stand in presence with another, what is reflected back to them is their beingness. They see that, and it's amplified because you are standing in presence, and that sometimes allows them to look to see, which is not necessarily always the case for the first experiment or so. So, in a certain way, it also provides a safe chamber where there's no expectations, where there's no demands, where there's no judgments, where there's no requirements. You're just being with another, then they have the opportunity to also just be. That's a gift.
Hi, guys. When you were talking, I saw a picture of myself in action, and I realized, probably you're all aware of the situation. You go in a shop, or you go a cafe, anywhere. Normally, we go like robots. We say, how much is this thing? Or please send me a cafe. But if you look at the guy and you see him in the eyes and you respect him as a human being, there is a strange thing, but he starts to see you for a moment. Then he continues his life, of course, no? His robotic life, as anyone. It's, as you say, it's the survival mechanism. We cannot be 24 hours. Only the bank does 24 hours. Okay, that's a joke. But I found that very interesting. No? You look at his eyes, you see him, and for a while he sees you. That's what can I tell you?
Thank you.
And you begin that. So you go into a store or a cafe, and usually we're worried about the external. We're worried about, like, what the shopkeeper is going to say to us, or we're worried about, you know, getting the right table or the right, or worried about what the waiter or waitress is going to say to us. We're worried about the external. What I'm saying is that this is offering the journey, chapter 2 here in Invocation of Presence, is saying, what if you start with invoking your presence, mm-hmm. and you walk in a certain way, you have this, what I call, active surrender to the space. First of all, you're going to find the right table. I guarantee you. You always do, and then you have the ability to do other things too. So you start with that, but it's an internal action first. You invoke your presence, then you move forward. Okay? Go ahead. Okay, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here.
David?
Yes. Pat knew you were going to say something.
You knew I was going to come up eventually. This is a very interesting phenomena that you and Pat and the person who just spoke. Who was that?
Bernardo from Argentina.
Oh, hi, Bernardo. It's Judy from Florida. What I notice is, I'll tell you a very brief experience, but what I notice is when you have that momentary connection with somebody, it's like someone who's not had the experience before is almost standing naked in front of you at that moment. And I had an experience about 4 years ago when I first moved to Florida, where they couldn't get my piano up the steps because they're like wooden beach steps and blah, and I donated it to a school, a university in Miami, and I was invited there, whatever, for something to thank me. And I was with this guy who was a 40-year-old world-famous pianist, and as a gift he brought me into this chamber where my piano was, and he played for me. It was the most incredible, I would say, really spiritual connection, and I was very, very present with him, and he just melted, and we sat down at the table afterwards, and it's like he told me the most, I mean, everything about himself. It was like he was naked in front of me, walked me back to my car, and then he looked at me, and I could see he got really scared. In other words, the experience actually frightened him, and he had not really done that with a stranger, you know, and he made a comment to me, and it kind of was shocking. And I think that, you know, this thing about not pushing, you know, really thank you for bringing that up, Dave, because at the same time that we're invoking our presence, we also have to have part of our attention on that other person and be tuned in to that person so that we do not violate them.
So let me ask a question then. This is a question for the group. Is there anybody on the online right now? Yeah. So here's my question. So Judy said, and Pat implied when she was speaking, this idea of he got really frightened. Right? Remember this? And does that make sense to everybody? Can you kind of like intuit that a little bit? Why? Why did the guy get frightened? I think it's important to understand this point, Judy and Harry. Why did the guy get frightened? Ben?
Well, I'd like to respond to that.
Hang on.
Okay.
In my experience, I would say vulnerability, because in that kind of situation that I have experienced, one feels very vulnerable, and in our culture today, we're not familiar with that feeling, and being in that feeling of openness with a stranger, with the culture the way it is not really very safe.
Not conducive. Yeah. Go ahead, Judy.
Well, this is going to sound really weird.
Speak right into your phone.
I said this is going to sound weird. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounded really weird. Go ahead.
Okay. They've lost control. In other words, they've lost control of the false personality. The false personality has fallen away for the moment, and they're in new territory. And sometimes that moment that happened with this musician, it was such a strong feeling of love, and it's scary.
So back to my two hands spaced about the length of a cubit. On the one hand is the phenomenal world, and the other hand is the non-phenomenal world. When we are start to be rooted by accident sometimes, like in this case of Judy, that was an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Because of her presence and her skill set, she was able to bring this individual into that, and he was moving toward a different world. It's literally a different world. It looks the same, right? This room that we're in right now. Ivan and Pat and I have sat in rooms where it's the same room and 100 different rooms present themselves during the course of an evening. And the next paragraph says, well, actually, I'm down the third paragraph on the English
page
book.
Page 9
on the left. In general, man travels in a form of trans-space shift from world of phenomena to the non-phenomena world, phenomenal world beyond the veil by sleep, drugs, hypnotism, or accident. He does not and cannot in this way produce any permanent being. We're creating methodology for permanent being. And then, see, he does not stand. The vessel in which the soul is nurtured from its first form, an immortal thing without consciousness, memory, or conscience toward the absolute. In this respect, he is an exile from his possible exalted state and does not know it.
And the next little phrase, I think, goes along very, very far to this aspect that, you know, as another human being, as Bernardo was giving us the instance in the cafe when you would look into another's eyes when they were serving you your tea or whatever. It is, of course, the respect and the care for another that you would recognize, that you would not want to frighten another by full exposure of yourself in your being state. Because
right.
Most folks have not had that experience before, and it will be a fright to them the first time their buffers come down and they have an experience of something other than their ordinary self. And that's really what it is. It's a bit of a conscience that we care for each other in the aspect of not dragging you or hauling you out of sleep, but if you stand present in front of another, they may choose to be aroused for a moment into the state of being from which they are exiled, but they do not know this. And the buffering issue is the one in which, as someone who has experienced that and is conscientious about another, you would not smash down someone else's buffers. You would stand in front of them and be present if they so choose. They will meet you in the being state. That may not mean that they're at all familiar or have any clue about that.
And this is what's called offering hospitality. And so hospitality isn't an external form of making tea and crumpets for somebody. It's allowing them to be there should they choose to come and be with you. They'd like to be with you in that space. You're saying, I'm offering you hospitality, which is a very important thing to learn how to do. And if you are start off in your inner space, then you do see people in their eye, and you automatically see them as people. You're able to see them, you're not defensive. So in that line where he says, you know, you work in exile there, and that refers back to chapter 1, page 2, where EJ says to us, he says, I work in exile for my future family. Okay? We are that family. We are that family. And we are given the opportunity to provide hospitality for others at the dinner table.
Thank you for sharing that story, Judy. That experience I don't know what the appropriate language would be, but, you know, we use the word sometimes newbie or virgin or whatever. it can be very terrifying and very shocking, not necessarily because of anything that we do or don't do, but the definition of the space, if you're in a being state,
the
that can be terrifying for someone. And, yeah, the exposure is very high.
Well, it was shocking for me, too, actually, because it was absolutely pure and absolutely intense.
Yep.
What we've noticed, so this is invocation. And what we've noticed over the years is that sometimes the invocation is very intense, and we understand in we read the ABD where it says the cleansing radiation,
mm-hmm.
you know, the cleansing radiation of the space. And sometimes it is so difficult that people leave, and they leave in various ways. Sometimes they just get up and leave.
Or not all.
Or the most common and fascinating to watch is they fall asleep. They're literally, they're in the space, they fall asleep. And that is a way for them to leave that space, that the white light was too much at that time. So they protect themselves to go back to what they're able to experience. So this is what is your capacity? What your capacity is, you'll find. You find out your capacity when you're in those spaces and allowing yourself to be, in a sense, hit by that unusual world that you were in, Judy.
You are stretched a little
bit. Can you stretch yourself just a
little
bit more? Each time, just a little bit more. And so we practice that in places that you don't expect to practice it. So this becomes a reminder. When you fall asleep, let that become a reminding factor.
It's hard when you're asleep.
David, it seems that when we activate our presence in front of someone, that it's the same as putting up a mirror that reflects back to them some of their essence in themselves, and it's new territory and it's novel, and that's probably why it's frightening.
It is new territory. That's what I'm trying to tell us, and the thing I saw yesterday was this distinction between the phenomenal world and non-phenomenal. We're literally moving back and forth. Let's see here. Back at the bottom of that very same page, when the attention is automatically fixated in outer attractions, the invocation of presence, which is a voluntary activity, is a luxury, not a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
This one-centered life without presence is a powerful form of world hypnosis called Maya. The word Maya does not mean the world itself is an illusion, but check this out. But the identification with the phenomenal side of the veil produces illusion. I am identified. When I am identified, so what does sensing mean? What do we mean when we say, this is what you're sensing? You're sensing your own electrical body. We'll have to do HBM again one of these days.
David, can we pause here? Because I think this is important not to skip over.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to go back to what you just read. I think that's really important. That identification with the phenomenal side of the veil produces the phenomenal illusion. And I'll give you an example. We think things are solid. However, a fully realized being can walk through a wall. So, and can control matter. So what we see in the third dimensional world is not real. It exists, but not as we're seeing it. We're seeing it through a prism of third dimension. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
No argument with you about that. That's a very clear description. And the other part of that, which goes along with it, is the description of how you come to be experiencing things in that manner is two sentences before, a one-centered life without presence. And that's
right.
What David was describing before, when you have the experience in the left hand of identification with the phenomenal world, and in the right hand, the invocation of presence in the non-phenomenal world. And as these experiences in the one world or the other can actually be objectively noticed as different.
There you go.
You have to personally experience in your own person the difference internally between presence in the non-phenomenal and identification with the phenomenal, and therefore the illusion.
Well, David mentioned
the
shamanic
right
world. That's exactly what we're talking about. I mean, it's nothing like what we see.
Correct.
It's nothing like we see. I took this.
Nothing like what we see, smell, or touch, or nothing.
When I was living in L.A., I met a guy named Teek Tianan, and E.J. knew him and was pleased with him. And he ran the East-West Buddhist Center down there off of Western. And I was taking a meditation course with him one day. It was on a weekend, and we were in our second day of meditation. He comes in the afternoon. And, you know, we're having trouble with your legs and stuff like that. And you say to me, and you just laugh, right? And just keep going. So he says, well, I want you to sit around this table. So we sit around the table, and he proceeds to tell us, he says, where's the table? And I said, well, there is the table's right here. And he goes, what do you mean? Is the leg the table? No. Well, is this part over here the table? Where is the table? And then you got into that space where you were suspended for a moment, plus you've been meditating for about 36 hours, and you're suspended. And then he goes, and don't forget, that table is made of atoms. What are the atoms? Mostly it's an atom. It's an electrical force, which is a positive, it's a negative, and a neutral, right? Kind of hanging out, kind of next to each other. Mostly, it's space. So, what do you call it? The consensus reality.
Sure, go ahead, call it that.
I'm going to call it
reality.
The consensus reality
on,
that we have here is what we depend on to secure our ego as we go through the world. And it's very difficult to give that up. And this is what we must start to see. As Pat was telling us about this movement between the two worlds, try to get a feeling. What does it feel like in your electrical sensing mechanism when you can see that you're identified with something?
You're going to have a hard time driving, David, if you give it up.
Hey, I'm driving all the way to Southern California tomorrow, so you better.
if he makes it there, Judy, we'll know that he was asleep.
Okay, great.
Actually, David, I'd like to make a comment because the whole course of this discussion, I think, is very interesting. But going back to the beginning of this book, I want to point out that I think that this process, you know, the progress that the teacher is making, and that, you know, as a speaker in this book, EJ, you know, or Mr. G, you know, he started out earlier by saying, well, tonight is a night we have to make a reformulation of our work. We have to start out, we have to think about the future generations, and we have to start over again. We're going to start from zero. We're going to recast it and so on. And I think that this is what he's building up here. And I, you know, it strikes me that especially all the paragraphs and the explanation that he devotes here to that person that you meet, that you think may have some inclination or some magnetic center, you know, to come to this work. And he's saying, like, We don't want to waste our time trying to wake up robots. You know, we don't want to torture anybody out of their sleep. We don't want to do it. So we're reformulating our work, and this is what we want. We have an exercise. We have the real goods here. We tell them, try this. You know, you do this. This is a two-minute exercise. And then he goes on. I think it's very interesting that he says, he doesn't just say, give them the two-minute exercise and then either send them away or see if they'll come back, you know, for a study group meeting or do this, do that. He says, no, you know, see if they, if this exercise demonstrates to them that they're lacking attention or that they actually have a need to voluntarize their presence and to not be distracted and to be able to actually sit for 2 minutes and do this, practice this degree of awareness or mindfulness or whatever, then you know you can now invest something further, give them something else to do, have the next step.
Yeah.
Think about, now talk about the invocation of presence exercise. But I think that he's, in a sense, that whole, all this introductory matter to this exercise, you know, to this book about invoking presence, it's like the teacher is saying, what we're going to cast out is all of this allegedly convincing, you know, theoretical knowledge, you know, the catechism, the structure, the philosophy. And, you know, and I think it's also like saying, like, well, you know, we're not, and I think we hear EJ, by the way, most of us are aware of this, but we periodically or very often hear EJ saying, well, you know, at one time maybe this was a Buddhist school, well, this is not a Buddhist school, well, this is not a Sufi school, or this is not a Kabbalistic school, this is actually not a four, I don't know if you've heard him say this, this is not a fourth way school. We are not doing the fourth way here. We're not doing this, we're not doing that, we're not doing that. In a sense, I mean, I think EJ practically every other week he says something like this. Oh, let's sit down here. We're going to reformulate our work, you know, because now, guess what? Get out your tools. We're going to make jewelry, you know.
Right.
We're going to...
Yeah.
We're going to have a theater performance,
right.
You know, and this is what we're going to do. So I'm just saying that it seems to me this is like a... There's something very Socratic, actually, about this process of this book. And also, it's very Socratic what Tianan is, at least, led you guys through. It's like breaking down your ordinary relationship with reality.
But I don't think Tianan could have done that if we hadn't been in that space. Okay?
Yeah, do the meditation first.
But now that you're bringing up the Bible, Ivan, there's something I wanted to, that's right on point. Because in the Bible it says, I'm in the world, but not of it. I wasn't born of this world. But we have to discover that. We have to discover that where we're born, what is our legacy? What is our true legacy? You know, our true legacy is not this world. We're born of a different material, and we are that material. And part of our job then is to safeguard it. We're curators of fine art in the museum, and we're curating this gift that we've been given, and it's a worthy job. It's worth the effort. It really is worth that effort. So. Then there's this whole next, we'll just do the next paragraph, and the paragraph after that's a little meaty.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Pat. You were going to say something?
Yeah. Well, I don't ever feel that I can go past this point.
Good.
Because I have to keep reminding myself that it is of no significance if it's only theoretical. If there's not time and grade, if there's not experience, personally experienced, any of these next paragraphs are only hypothetical. They don't matter unless there's something that is of
you're right.
Language. True. Lives. Yeah, unless it's true to me, you know, honest to me. I appreciate so much that EJ can easily and grandly, experientially make us feel as if we are participating, because one, he uses we
a lot,
and two, his descriptions are very inductive. In general, man travels in a form of trans-spaceship from the world of phenomena. If you just took each word, like we do sometimes, each word a universe, and took each word and made that word true to you in this moment before you went to the next word. So I just get, sometimes I just get here,
yeah.
And I'm not going. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at with this.
Well, there's a closing paragraph for where we are for tonight.
Help yourself to this.
But I want to read it in English and then in Spanish.
Oh.
Okay. But maybe you can read it in Spanish, Bernardo. Okay. It's the paragraph. How do you say paragraph in Spanish? ¿Cómo se dice paragraph?
Párrafo.
Párrafo.
Párrafo. Párrafo. No, párrafo. It's emphasis on that pa.
Okay. The one after, the one we just read, where it says identification with the phenomenal side of the veil, where it's italicized, the one that starts with we cannot feel real being satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Then. I'm going to do it in English, and then you're going to do it in Spanish, okay? Can you hand him the phone for that? Okay? I'll start. Okay. So the next paragraph is, and we're going to read it a little bit slowly because it's what Pat's telling us. We cannot feel real being satisfaction if we fail to use our lives for voluntary evolution. At the end, we will feel remorse if we had wasted our life on phenomenal fixation. Por favor.
Dice así, no podemos sentir una auténtica satisfacción de ser si no usamos nuestras vidas para la evolución voluntaria. Al final, sentiremos el remordimiento si hemos desperdiciado nuestra vida en las fijaciones del mundo fenoménico.
Cool.
Yes, más, por favor. Una vez más, por favor. Más espacio, por favor. Y louder to the microphone, por favor.
El párrafo dice así. No podemos sentir una auténtica satisfacción de ser si no usamos nuestras vidas para la evolución voluntaria. Al final, sentiremos el remordimiento si hemos desperdiciado nuestra vida en las fijaciones del mundo fenoménico.
We cannot feel real being satisfaction if we fail to use our lives for voluntary evolution. At the end, we will feel remorse if we had wasted our life on phenomenal fixations.
So the hope and the corollary to this paragraph is that you can feel real being satisfaction. You can. It's good work. And you feel good about the work. You feel solid all the way through when you're doing that kind of work. We'll do practical work on self again one of these days, but the whole thing about remorse of conscience, which is a profound chapter in that book, the practical work on self. So we have remorse because we didn't do it. But my goodness, we're being offered simple, direct techniques on how to invoke our presence. It's right here. So the next time you walk into your favorite cafe, try to walk in not starting by being worried about what's going to happen, but start by invoking your presence first. That's the gift that you can give to those that are there. You invoke your presence in a simple manner, without expectation or attempting to do anything to anybody else. You're there because your work on self is active. That's the only reason. And then maybe you see something else that happens around you. So it's not the external world that gives us being satisfaction. It's our internal work on self that we're able to actually garner a bit of satisfaction. I mean, when I go home, I do this, I feel satisfied being here with friends in the work, and so grateful for a couple of people around me that are interested in these things. It's time well spent. Okay. What else you got, Dan?
We have a new viewer named Sandra who says, gracias.
Oh, de nada.
Excellent. Who is it again? Sandra? Sandra.
Yeah.
Where is Sandra from?
Forgot says hello.
Hey.
Yay.
Tianzhou says, extraordinary clarity this evening. Thanks to all for your contribution to this magical space.
What happens?
Thank you,
Harry, for making it possible for all of us. What happens is that when our invocation begins to work, you literally can see more. When we drop the phenomenal fixation, we see more.
And we are also seen.
And we are seen.
Sandra says, from Argentina.
Hola, Sandra.
También Bernardo, Argentina.
Magnetic.
Hola, Argentina. Maradona.
Great.
The world is made whole again.
Yay.
Thank you for checking in, Sandra, and for speaking out.
And you are here.
I am here right now. I am
and
here now.
Next.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be leaving our area for 4 days.
So you're going to go and come back.
Southern California, and then I'm going to come back.
Okay.
I mean, you know, when I leave this space, I never know what's going to happen.
What?
I just wish for the best. Indeed. So, anyway, thanks to everybody for coming. We'll see everybody next Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and we'll make more progress on Chapter 2.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, you two. Thank you for coming.